The president, on my recommendation, gave approval for the operation early morning of Friday, November 20th. A key factor in the final decision to launch this SAR mission, this search and rescue mission, was the new information we received this month that some of our men were dying in prisoner of war camps. On Friday, November 20th, shortly after 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which was about 2 a.m. in North Vietnam, a small rescue team successfully landed by helicopter at a reported prisoner of war compound at San Tay, approximately 20 nautical miles west of Hanoi. Operating in darkness, Colonel Simons and his men landed, entered and searched the compound where the prisoners of war reportedly were being held. Regrettably, the rescue team discovered that the camp had recently been vacated. No prisoners were located. The SAR team, according to its well-rehearsed plan, searched every building, broke the locks on doors of rooms which had been used as detention cells. They successfully returned to safety without suffering a single serious casualty.
Any indication, sir, how long that camp had been abandoned?
Several weeks. However, again, you must realize that the type of construction in that part of the world will deteriorate rapidly when not used.
How long were you on the ground?
Less than an hour.
How many enemy did you kill? Did you kill anybody in that ground skirmishing? Did you fire your weapons?
I'll call on Colonel Simons for the answer to that question.
Yes, we did fire our weapons.
General, is there anything wrong with your intelligence?
I would imagine so. Certainly, we didn't go around and count bodies or determine if anybody was dead. We fired only when it appeared that it threatened the success of the mission.
Now, who do you blame for the intelligence failure here?
I can't answer that question at all. I'm not sure I know what you mean by intelligence failure.
The North Vietnamese say American planes dropped bombs in the Hanoi Haiphong area last weekend. Secretary Laird said today the rescue mission was the only operation north of the 19th parallel. There were other reasons for the strikes below the 19th parallel. Some involved retaliation for the shooting down of American reconnaissance planes. Also, there were some understandings made with North Vietnam when we stopped the bombing of the North 2 years ago. Among them were no shelling of South Vietnamese cities and no infiltration across the demilitarized zone. There have been shellings of South Vietnamese cities recently, and the raids were, in part, retaliation for that. Another reason was the continued buildup in North Vietnam of supplies destined for Laos and Cambodia. These supply dumps were hit as well. And in reaction to all of this, there was comment today in the Senate.
I'm very apprehensive about it. This is on top of, in addition to the bombing raid, which took place about 30 hours, and when you add this up to the invasion of Cambodia last spring, all of it, it seems to me, creates a pattern which indicates that the real policy of this administration is a military victory and not a negotiated settlement. And this has been the core of the argument. It's been going on for some 5 years.
The executive branch does not trust the legislative branch, and I'm quite satisfied that the legislative branch reciprocates that feeling. I was frequently called to the White House when Lyndon Johnson was president, usually to be told what he planned to do. And sometimes I advised against doing it, but nevertheless, he went ahead with it just the same. But we usually had a few hours' notice.
And President Nixon? We
don't get notice. We read in the paper now what went on.
This is NBC Nightly News, Monday, November 23rd, 1970. Brought to you by Protein 21, a shampoo that helps you beat the frizzies.
Wow, ideas about sex, fashion, and grooming are really changing. Like, take hair, for instance. There's a shampoo with protein that can actually help make split ends disappear. It's true. I saw this actual microscopic film of a split end. Protein 21 shampoo goes on and poof! So I've been using it regularly and wow, soft and manageable. I mean, Protein 21 shampoo really helps you beat the frizzies.
The reaction from the enemy to this weekend's raids was immediate and sharp. Xuan Tuy, Hanoi's chief delegate at the Paris Peace Talks, said his delegation would boycott this week's session of the talks, and the Viet Cong representative said the same thing. It is not known yet whether the enemy boycott of the talks will last beyond this week. In Paris today, the North Vietnamese wouldn't say.
Newsmen went to the North Vietnamese headquarters in the Paris suburb of Choisy-le-Roi. There, Hanoi's negotiator, Xuan Tuy, continued the North Vietnamese denunciation of last weekend's U.S. air raids against their country. Tuy insisted there is no understanding between Washington and Hanoi permitting American reconnaissance flights over North Vietnam. But this time, the North Vietnamese moved from just words to action.
And so it's firm protest. The delegation of the government of the DRV to the Paris Conference on Vietnam declares it will not attend the scheduled November 25th, 1970, 93rd plenary session and put it off till December the 3rd, 1970. Once again, we want to declare that there is no understanding whatsoever. And the United States has no right at all to carry out a reconnaissance flight over North Vietnam. Any encroachment on the sovereignty and security of the DRV will be punished by the Vietnamese people.
The question here now is, what will the North Vietnamese do if the United States continues to send its planes over their country? Xuan Tuy was vague on that, but the feeling here is that U.S. reconnaissance flights will continue to draw ground fire and protests, but resumed U.S. air raids will draw more communist action here, more boycotts of the peace talks. Garrick Utley, NBC News in Choisy-le-Roi.
Officials in Saigon today announced another withdrawal of American troops, 3,800 men this time, which brings American strength there to 360,000, the lowest figure in 4 years. It was also disclosed today that in Cambodia, in this war, 50 American planes have been lost, 7 of them since American troops pulled out of Cambodia last June. American troops may be out, but in addition to American losses in the air, there has been one kind of American buildup on the ground.
This was the American Embassy in Phnom Penh in 1964, 5 stories tall and big enough for a high school. 1,000 Cambodian youngsters now attend the Lycée Voltaire in the old embassy building. The embassy building was sacked by a mob in 1964. Soon afterward, the Americans left Cambodia. They left behind their radio masts, but took along their air conditioners. Last year, the first American diplomats came back to Cambodia with their air conditioners. The new embassy is still being remodeled. The building was once called the Sunny Hotel, and in the early 1960s, it housed American soldiers who were advising the Cambodian army. There are no American military advisors now, so the rooms in the Sunny Hotel are being made into offices. The lowest ranking diplomat will have his own private bathroom. But Ambassador Emery Swank is strongly opposed to creating another huge American bureaucracy in Phnom Penh. He says his mission will be, in his words, as small and trim an operation as is consistent with offering the Cambodian government the assistance it needs. The American presence will probably grow larger, but probably not to what it was 6 years ago. And perhaps that's progress of a sort. Perhaps the United States has learned that it's not a good idea to show too many American faces, whether they're soldiers or bureaucrats or diplomats, in a small foreign country. Richard Hunt, NBC News, Phnom Penh.
At Fort Benning, Georgia, the My Lai murder trial of Army Lieutenant William Kelly continued today. So far, 15 witnesses have appeared for the prosecution and 13 of them have testified that they saw bodies of civilians lying on the ground there. And the prosecution today also established an important legal point about Callie's presence at My Lai.
Not until today, the fifth day of the trial, did a witness establish that Lieutenant Kelly was at My Lai. A member of Charlie Company said he saw Kelly once, but there was nothing incriminating about the testimony. The main witness today was a helicopter pilot, who, according to news accounts, had faced Kelly at the scene in an armed confrontation. Lieutenant Hugh Thompson told of landing his helicopter at My Lai at least four times that day. At one point, he came down near a ditch filled with between 50 and 100 Vietnamese. Thompson said some were dead, some were alive. An American described only as a colored non-commissioned officer told Thompson, the only way to help these people is to put them out of their misery. The next time Thompson landed near the ditch, everyone in it was dead except a small child whom Thompson flew to a hospital. He said he also landed near a bunker where about nine villagers had sought refuge. Nobody interfered with Thompson when he requested that the Vietnamese be evacuated. At no time did Thompson say he saw Kelly that day, nor was he asked if he could identify Kelly. A member of Thompson's crew, Lawrence Colburn, told the same basic story, and he too never mentioned seeing Kelly. Colburn and Thompson's testimony, which the defense tried to discredit, only established that a lot of villagers were killed at My Lai. They said nothing to back up the government's charge that Kelly committed murder. Robert Gorelski, NBC News at Fort Benning, Georgia.
Great dinner party, eh, hon?
Oh, yes, honey, but I do have to correct you on one thing.
I used the wrong fork?
No.
I ate somebody else's salad.
No, it was your grammar.
My grammar?
Yes. You told Alice...
What did I tell Alice what?
Well, you said to Alice that Winston tastes good like a cigarette should, and that's bad grammar.
Honey, I was telling Alice about Winston Super King.
But you should pay more attention to your grammar.
Hon, what do you want, good grammar or good taste?
I want you to stop talking to Alice.
Pardon our grammar, but Winston tastes good like a cigarette should.
Where did Winston Super King get its bad grammar? Same place it got its great taste. Winston King.
Honey, is Alice prettier than me?
Prettier than I.
President Nixon won a close and important vote in the Senate this afternoon. His opponents failed by four votes to override the president's veto of that bill, which would limit the amount of money a political candidate can spend on radio and television. So that issue is dead this session. There will be no limitation on campaign spending. The White House has promised another bill for the next session. The president might have won by five votes today instead of four had Republican Carl Mundt of South Dakota been present. But a year ago today, Mundt was the victim of a stroke which impaired his speech and kept him off the Senate floor.
Senator Mundt's office. Yes, sir. Why don't I let you talk to Mr. Reddy, the senator's legislative assistant? Hold the line, please.
1 year later, the only noticeable change in the senator's office is the absence of the senator. Carl Mundt came to Congress in 1939, a fiercely partisan Republican, an avid conservative, and a zealous foe of communism. Mundt and a young California congressman named Richard Nixon made names for themselves in the Alger Hiss Communism in Government investigation of the late 1940s, and Mundt later presided over the famed Army-McCarthy hearings in the Senate. President Nixon is counting Mundt in his slim ideological majority in the Senate that convenes in January, although he's not likely to be there. Some Republican leaders want Mundt to resign in time for the outgoing GOP governor of South Dakota to name another Republican to the seat. While the controversy builds, the senator's office goes on as always.
We answer the mail about the, prepare the answers about the same. We make the contacts with the bureaucracy and the administration people downtown, and we handle it just as if he was in the office. The only difference would be the vote on the floor. We have a different procedure there. We have to obtain a pair for him if we can with another senator, or announce his position so it's printed in the record, what he would vote if he were there. If it's a new issue where we haven't discussed, I either go out and talk to him, or one of the men goes out and talk to him, or we call him on the floor, get his view, and then transmit that to Mark Dreist to try and get the pair or the position announced.
Just how is Senator Mundt?
He's coming along, making improvement. It's a slow progress. He walks pretty good. He has speech difficulty. It's more today than there was a month ago, but he still has some way to go.
Do you anticipate that he will stay on, that there will be no resignation?
Yes, I do. I anticipate he will stay on.
The 70-year-old senator now comes home from Bethesda Naval Hospital on weekends, sometimes goes to ball games, occasionally drops into his office. But the doctors make no predictions as to whether Carl Mundt will ever again fulfill his senatorial duties. Paul Duke, NBC News, Washington.
A high Red Cross official in East Pakistan said today that flood relief operations there now are going forward satisfactorily, although others say that's not so. That earlier difficulties have been overcome, but that of the 2.5 million people affected by the floods, 500,000 need food, shelter, and medicine urgently. Two of the places hardest hit in the floods caused by a tidal wave were the islands of Bola and Hatia. So far, Pakistani officials say more than 150,000 people have died, and as many as 500,000 may turn out in the end to have died. Dhaka Airport has had more traffic since the disaster than it has handled in years. Planes of several countries and helicopters are being flown in daily with all kinds of relief supplies. The United States alone has sent thousands of blankets and tents and 2 plane loads of high nutrition foods, as well as 6 helicopters to drop the supplies on stricken communities. One high priority item on the list is medicine. Cholera has broken out, and the Pakistanis say it is now in the epidemic stage.
Another cold, honey.
Oh, you look terrible, Harry.
I feel terrible. I've been sneezing and coughing, my throat scratching. I feel achy, and I need some rest.
Take NyQuil.
Vicks NyQuil, nighttime cold medicine, relieves your major cold symptoms for hours. Relieves them so well, it helps you get the rest you need.
I'm lucky to have you, Mildred.
I know.
You got a cold tonight? Put NyQuil to work.
Noses. What can cough drops do for them? Well, we made a different kind of cough drop. New Victors. It's the only cough drop with thousands of pockets of cooling menthol eucalyptus vapors. So Victor's not only soothes your scratchy throat, but helps your stuffy nose feel cooler and clearer. Victor's, the cough drop for your throat that goes to your nose. Any nose.
NBC Nightly News continues, brought to you by Protein 21. A shampoo that helps split ends disappear.
Grease could make your hair look natural if your hair were made of grease. Alcohol by itself could make it look natural if hair were made of alcohol. But hair is made of protein. So for the most natural-looking hair, you want a hair groom made with protein. Menin Protein 29 has a special protein formula no other hair groom has. Now, what could make hair more natural-looking than putting protein on protein? Menin Protein 29, any way you like it. Gel, liquid, cream, or aerosol.
The Supreme Court today ruled that a man can plead guilty to a crime even if he believes he is innocent, if he thinks it will get him a lesser sentence. This is being interpreted by students of the court as a sign that the court is turning toward a harder position on law and order. At Folsom Prison in California, a 2-week strike by prisoners ended today, as did 3 days of racial fighting at Cummins Prison Farm in Arkansas. At Cummins, a policeman said, "We are very, very lucky we did not have a tragedy." But almost everybody, from Chief Justice Warren Burger down to the poorest prisoner, agrees that the American system of detention and criminal justice is a mess and a scandal. Here is Dean Brayless with the first of a series of reports.
This is New York City's House of Detention, Queens Branch. It is a prison, a lockup. It was built 95 years ago with the idea that it would contain no more than 194 prisoners. Today, it is still in use. Today, there are 334 men behind its bars. little over a month ago, the inmates of this prison revolted. They overpowered guards, took hostages, smashed furniture, and started fires. The revolt quickly spread to three more New York City jails. The majority of the prisoners were driven to violence by their despair. The prisoners had armed themselves with makeshift spears and sharpened table knives and forks, but their real strength was the very overcrowding they were protesting. By sheer force of numbers, they took over four jails and held 32 guards as hostages. The prisoners were in control for 4 days. Here at the Manhattan House of Detention, known as the Tombs, much of what happened during the rebellion revolved around the chaplain, Father Lawrence Gibney. He was inside for the first 2 days of the revolt. He acted as a go-between in the early negotiations. He has been at the Tombs for 10 years.
See, they weren't rebelling against the Tombs or the Tombs officers. They felt a sense of unity. They knew. They didn't hurt any of these men. They treated them well. The first to be fed were the hostages. The first to be bedded down and the only ones to get blankets. They knew that the personnel themselves were very much in sympathy with many of their grievances, not only as fellow human beings, but they had to breathe that foul air. They had to be in there 8 or 12 or 20 hours not seeing fresh air and so on. It was actually a unity. Of course, I and no correction personnel wanted riots and hostages, but we wanted and do now want a solution of these grievances.
Father, will it happen again?
The next time it will be worse, because each time it gets worse, promises are made that reform will come, and there'll be no reprisals, and instead actions are taken that at least are interpreted as reprisals. The next time, blood will be spilt.
During the rebellion, Corrections Commissioner George McGrath ordered Father Gibney out of the tomb, saying the chaplain was inciting the men to riot. McGrath finally smashed the revolt with tear gas and clubs. All the hostages were rescued alive. Eventually, Father Gibney was allowed back in the tombs.
Well, Commissioner, what would you say to Father Gibney?
Well, rather than just to Father Gibney, I think that the problem that he presents is one that exists all over the country in so many areas. These kinds of grievances can be made clear to all concerned without resorting to violence. And the taking of hostages eliminates all other considerations in my judgment. No more talk about negotiating, no more talk about alleviating grievances. People that will take the lives of other people in their hands with the kind of danger that was present in these situations and engage in this monstrous destruction of property, millions and millions of dollars. This we cannot tolerate if we're to survive as a city. We can't tolerate this if we're to survive as a civilization.
We believe strongly that the tombs are being left as the absolute ultimate ghetto of our community. The medical and mental facilities, the narcotics facilities that should be available for sick men are not available. And we are left to administer a prison system that should in many parts be a hospital, and that certainly in many parts should have segregated in among its ranks the inmates who have deep social illnesses. I was in the tombs last week when another attempted suicide took place, and I went to see the young man who was involved, white, 23, homeless, loiterer. Whatever he's been in prison for, you could look into that boy's eyes and know that that fellow was through with this life. That we saved him on that day, but in the circumstance of the tombs, there will be no way of saving him in the weeks ahead.
Chuck Wagon, instant dinner for dogs. The right helpings of what dogs like best and need most. We took big, tender, juicy chunks, golden nuggets loaded with vitamins and rich meat broth. We quick-dried it to make Chuck Wagon what dogs like best and need most. Just add warm water, and it comes back again instantly. Rich meat broth, golden nuggets, and red, juicy chunks. Big, tender, tempting as ever. Get your dog a complete full-course dinner that serves up instantly. Chuck Wagon. Next to you, what he likes best and needs most.
Israel said today that Egypt had violated the Suez ceasefire yesterday for the first time since it had been renewed. It said the Egyptians had sent three flights of Russian-built planes over the Israeli side of the Suez Canal, once on Sunday and twice today. The Egyptians denied it. Janos Kadar, Hungarian Communist Party chief, said today that Hungary is ready to exchange ambassadors with West Germany. The New York Stock Exchange got off to a good start for the week today. The Dow Jones Industrials gained almost 6 points, and the value of an average share went up 20 cents. On the American Exchange, an average share gained 3 cents. And as the Penn Central and the stock market indicate, American values are changing. Consider the professional band of armed robbers who hit a government cashier's office here in Washington recently. They got clean away in their getaway car with a sizable amount of swag, but they were nabbed an hour later. Why? They had got their values wrong. They parked the getaway car in a bureaucrat's parking place, and he got so mad he wrote down their license number. Anybody in Washington can tell you that when it comes right down to it, a parking place is a lot more valuable than mere money. Thank you and good night for NBC News.